I am very sorry, but I'm sick and I'm gonna sound like shit because I'm very nasally. So, hi, how are ya? Welcome to episode 3. I'm really excited about this episode. I'm gonna be talking all things like sex, contraception, living in a small town with those topics going around with everyone. Yeah, and basically it's essentially just going to be my perspective, and also I put a poll up on my Instagram and a few questionnaires, and a lot of people wrote back to me with their experiences and if they're on the pill or if they're not on the pill. Yeah, so I'm going to be going through all of that today, and I hope you can listen in. But before I do all that, I'm just going to talk a bit about my week. I had a few mental health appointments, so I really wanted to, since I started the podcast, I've really gone down with my health, both physically and mentally. I've been stressing out a lot and I'm stopped eating properly. Like today, for say so, I've only eaten avocado, mushrooms and tomato on toast and a coffee, and I'm like not even hungry right now. And it's 5 o'clock right now, and I ate that at like 10:30, maybe 11. So something's going on with me, and obviously I wanted to go talk to a mental health because like a mental health professional, because that is the most important thing for me right now, so I can start with my mental health and then go into my physical health again and then go into everything else in my life. So, but yeah, I'm still enjoying doing the podcast and everything, and like I'm really hungry actually now thinking about it, so maybe I'm not that bad. Anyway, so how to book an appointment. So what I did was I booked an appointment through this app that I have, and I live in Toowoomba, so I go to a specific doctor on the east side. Anyway, I booked an appointment. It's a little bit longer. It's a longer consultation, so you need to book for a mental health care plan or ask for a longer consultation because you have a lot of things you need to talk about. You can book over the phone. You can do it on an app. If you live in Tenterfield, like as an example, which is like 5,000 people, and there's like three doctors, and it's really unreliable. Just call them, I'd say. I doubt you have any access to apps that allow access to their, like, I'm not sure if you can do that yet in Tenterfield or like any small country towns, but definitely call them and just say, I need a mental health care plan, or I need a longer consultation because I have a few things that I want to talk about, and they will let you. Like they will give you it, hopefully. Also, my mental health care plan didn't cost me a cent. I went to two appointments and they were both covered by a bulk bill, which is like Medicare, so Medicare covers you. Pretty sure. Yeah, so it took me about 10 minutes for the first consultation, and I also had a student in with me at the same time, so I was with a doctor, a student. Like doctor, whatever, studying student, and you know, I had to talk about. So what they ask you is like, why do you want a mental health care plan? What have you been going through? What are your struggles? Have you been taking medications? Have you got support at home? Do you have, you know, are you in a relationship? You know, they go through all this thing to just gain. Like if they're not your normal doctor, which this guy wasn't, they ask you to go back twice just so you can fill out a questionnaire to see what your depression or anxiety or stress levels are in like the last 4 weeks, and then there's another one which is within a week, so it really goes through how you're feeling recently, not previously. But they also obviously they go through your past. They don't, you know, you don't have to talk to them like you're going to talk to a therapist. You just say, I've had, you know, all of these things happen in my childhood and my adolescence. And I wasn't afraid to tell them. Like, I pretty much told them. I probably would have told this. I would have gone into more detail with the therapist, but I actually told them basically everything that has happened in my life, especially the big events that really affected me. And they were like, they did not, you know, express a single ounce of judgment on me. And obviously I wouldn't fucking care if they did. I'd probably tell them fuck off if they did, but they didn't, which is you know, normal. Don't think a doctor is there to help you, and doctors see a lot of fucking shit, so don't be afraid to go do it. Just grow up and go do it. For the first session, I just went in, talked about why I wanted this mental health care plan, came out of it with two questionnaires that I had to fill in the night or day of that I was going to go see them again, so that he can put that into like a compiled file and send it through to a specific therapist or psychotherapist, like a psychologist or anything, something like that. So, and then, you know, like they send through referrals to a few psychologists for you, and they ring you back within like a week. And if they don't ring you back, you call them and, you know, see how things are going. At the moment, it's hard to find people who will take in new clients, which is like someone will take you in for a client. It's just a matter of if those doctors know who's good and who's not. So they really have an idea of who they would like you to see and who they would prefer you to see. And that's really important, actually. And I think, you know, the guy said to me, you know, you've got a good head on your shoulders, you're pretty switched on, and you just, you know, it seems like you are in the healing process and you've done a lot of healing by sitting and thinking and talking about it to other people. And, you know, you really need, like, what I asked for was like a preventional care plan, like a mental health care plan that's preventative of what I've already been through. And essentially he just said, you know, you've got everything, like you're smart, you're switched on, you know what you're doing, you know how you feel and what you feel and why you feel of these things. All you need is just the tools to get you through the next kind of phase of your life. And I'm like, yes, thank you so fucking much, that's all I wanted. And I didn't go in there and be like, oh, I just don't know. Like people don't know sometimes, like probably most times out or not. And it might be a very recent thing that they haven't had to process yet. So don't go in there closed-minded. Go in there open so they can help you as much as they fucking can. It doesn't matter if you're a guy, doesn't matter if you're a fucking girl, if you're 15 or you're 28 or you're 50 or you're just some country, you know, if you're a country boy and you like, you know, that stereotype where fucking men are fucking men and all that bullshit, you know, I know you have feelings too, so you need to go fucking talk to someone if you're in that mental state. And I know a lot of guys who have been in that mental state and, you know, they've gotten themselves out of it, maybe, or they've had help from someone. But, you know, a preventative care plan is actually probably a really important thing for you, and especially me. But also, like, young girls out there, I kind of wish I did go to therapy younger. I did talk about in my previous episode that I did go to a homeopath and an acupuncturist professional, and I basically, they were my therapists, essentially, because I had to talk to them about why I was feeling all this stuff and why I was in pain, and they really helped me out. So, yeah, I'm going to stop it there, but yeah, I have been going downhill since this podcast started, and I'm trying to get my life back together, which is fine. Like, I'm really excited to do it, and right now I'm really hungry, so I might go grab something before I start the next step of this episode. Okay, let's get into it. So, essentially, I'm going to be talking about sexual health, the pill, alternative contraceptive methods, my experience on contraception, sex, and all of that shit. Living in a small town, you know, I already said all this shit, so I'll just talk about a little bit about my life when I started having sex or experienced sexual activity, I guess you could say. So from about like my real sexual activity started when I was probably like 16, when I was in a relationship. So when I got into, so I think I was 15 or I was just 16 and I got a boyfriend, and you know, it was lovely and all that. And I went on to the pill like about 3 weeks into this like relationship, I think, maybe, I don't really know. I just know my mum was like, okay, let's get you on the pill, because this is obviously your first sexual relationship that you're probably going to enter, and you're probably going to have sex. So, you know, my mum's really like set me up to have that safety net, and a lot of people do that and some people don't actually. So this is like a really important aspect. If you don't have that support and you are like too scared to talk to your parents about it, I suggest you do talk to your parents about it. But if you cannot, if they're not supportive, if they don't give a fuck, go see a doctor with your friend or by yourself. You need to help yourself, essentially. So, you know, as I got older, sex became a very important aspect of my life, and it was no longer hushed between my friend groups and friendships. You know, I think it's very important to talk about it. You know, people actually discover what things are okay and what things aren't in relationships and sexual activity. So, like, sexual assault, you know, cheating, STIs, and you find all this stuff out about, yeah, other people, but you also find out how to avoid or essentially, like, gain these experiences. And, you know, it's very, I'm about to sneeze. I remember we were on this camp, I'm not sure what year it was, but a couple of these girls, and they'll know who I'm talking about if they listen, don't worry, and we were just, like, in this, like, bunker thing all together, and we were just, like, talking about, we were, like, I don't know, like, 17 or 16, and we were just talking about, like, sex positions and shit, and just, you know, weird things that they've experienced or things that they have experienced and didn't like or hated. And it was like the moment that I was like, yeah, this is like, this isn't, should be normal, yet it's so fucking frowned upon to have sex. Like, it's important to talk about, especially when the generations are getting younger and younger and they're having sex. And to be honest, it's a very fucking normal thing. So anyway, I just remember, like, you know, the sex positions, and they were like, one girl was like showing us like this sex position. It was so fun. It was so funny. And, you know, I didn't really care, to be honest, because, like, I didn't care if they knew about who I've had sex with and all this stuff, because I think, essentially, I don't know, I just didn't give a fuck. And, you know, some aspects I did give a fuck about certain things, but who I had sex with, probably not, because I wasn't really ashamed of it. I was experimenting a lot because I had a lot of questions and doubts about my own, like, oh, I'll go into it eventually, but we're not going to go into it today. Maybe we will. I don't know. But I think discovering who you are, like, having sex is a major thing about discovering who you are. Like, it's a major thing for you. And if you don't have, like, there are people out there that have never had sex and may not ever want to have sex, and that's okay. I'm just saying you're missing out on, like, a, well, you know, some things, you know, it depends who you're with and who you've had sex with and how much experience you have and how you like it, essentially. So if you want to start that journey, I suggest you either start when it's, you know, appropriate for you and when you're ready. And it's okay. Like, fuck, I think I was 14 when I lost my virginity. And I don't regret the night that I did, but, you know, I wish maybe I lost it in a different way. And I probably won't go into that too much. And we all know who I lost my virginity to, so we're just not going to go there. Yeah, so, and yeah. Like, I'm not even sure I should say that shit. Like, I don't fucking care. It's a very normal thing. And it could have been prevented, but it was my decision. Like, it was consensual. It was my decision. I don't know if he remembers, but it was my decision, and it was probably the most dumbest decision. Like, it was so, like, I don't even, oh, it's just stupid. The situation was just really dumb. Anyway, and it's also very normal. Like, the first time you have sex is, for those people that haven't, or those people that have and they can relate to me, it's not great unless it's actually great for you. Like, it's not what is in the movies ever. It's very different. Some movie scenes might be really shit, but, you know, that's pretty much the gist of it, really. And it's okay. It's fine. It's all about experiencing things, new things, and trying things. And it's a fucking such a normal part of life. And I hate that, you know, girls in my town would fucking slut shame anyone who had sex, even though they were having sex. Like, there was no fucking doubt about that they were having sex. They were in relationships, you know. They had boobs. They were going through their fucking shit. What do you call it? Puberty. Like, they've hit puberty. You know, when you do hit puberty, that is the most kind of crucial time. And that is, like, when you do start having, you know, sexual thoughts. Like, you start thinking about, oh, do I like boys? Do I like girls? You know, do I want to start experiencing things? And talk to your parents about it as well. They'll probably talk to you once you hit puberty. You know, like, it's like the milestone for starting a new adventure, like starting the new fucking thing that, like, the new chapter of your life is when you hit your period. And people that, I don't think, you know, people hit their, I know someone who lost, like, started their period very young, like 9, I don't know. But it just depends on your body and your genetics and all that sort of stuff. And if you do fucking get your period either really early or really late in your adolescence, that's fucking fine. It's not a big deal. It's just what your body does and should not be a big deal to anyone. And, you know, unless it's, like, has some sort of fucking something's wrong with you, like something, not biologically, but something internally is wrong with you, then, you know, if you think that, just go see a fucking doctor and figure out what's wrong and figure out why you're feeling uncomfortable and, you know, talk to your fucking parents about it. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, probably shouldn't be listening to this if you're, like, 10, but if you are, no, you should not be. I hope there is no one listening to this if they're 10. But, so, essentially, I do not give a fuck if people know who I slept with. Like, I'm sure they fucking do. I couldn't give a fuck. I think that, you know, obviously I've just said my piece. Like I've said, I don't care. Like, it's a normal fucking thing. And, you know, people used to slut shame. People used to slut shame my best mate just because she had tits and she talked to boys like every other fucking girl in the entire world. And we used to hang out with boys and, you know, boys would like her, you know, like her. Yet she never fucking slept with a single one of them. And these people used to slut shame her just based on the fact that she had tits and the fact that everyone said, and the fact that boys talked to boys, like, ugh, I hope those people, like, realize how fucking dumb that is, right? Like, by now, surely they have realized it does not fucking matter. Especially if they are shaming someone for something that is so normal. It's so hypocritical because what you have to remember is once you become of the age where you can explore your sexuality, you need to remember that everyone your age is either having sex or thinking about it. It's an important thing in relationships and your own expression. Like, it's fucking important. Let's get into slut shaming. I fucking love this topic. I have used the word before, 100%, probably recently. But I've recently come into a perspective of the fact that it's actually quite a normal fucking thing as well. So the use of the word slut has become so broad. And, you know, it was originally a negative word that it has lost its meaning. And to be honest, in this day and age, like, being called a slut, yes, it's usually a negative thing, but people will call each other, like, you know, maybe in a friendship group, you'll call each other a slut because you're hyping them up on something that they've experienced, or, you know, having sex experience is probably really, could be really important to you, you could not give a fuck about it, but it also helps you in the future, like, whether you're fucking having sex with the same person, or you're going out every weekend, or, you know, you're sleeping with a few guys or a few girls every week or whatever. Obviously, I think that you should do it safely. You should be respectful of yourself and you should definitely be respectful of the people who you're sleeping with, or, you know, if it's a common casual partner and, you know, they might be catching feelings and you don't, you need to fucking let that go. Otherwise, you're going to really hurt them, and you should probably never contact them again until they are ready. Until at least you know that there are no feelings involved. And, you know, there's like so many things I could go on about. And if you're interested in that, tell me that you're interested in that topic and I will go through it. But, you know, by the time you're 20, you know, it's like it's like giving the go ahead to have sex with whoever you want. You know, being a slut, once it used to be defined as a woman with the morals of a man. So to all those men out there that do slut shame people, like girls especially, you are most likely having sex with one or two people a weekend. So, or like a week, or you could be having 3 to 4 people a week, you know, like, shut the fuck up. But, you know, there are more men than I know that are more men than that I know than women who go out and sleep with one or two chicks a night, or one or two chicks a weekend, you know. So it's just so ironic that men obviously came, you know, men, like, there's been so many authors in the past, like, 6 centuries that have written these concepts down and basically defined the term itself by describing people, and most of them were probably men, and I dare say they would be. Like, it's almost a congratulations, you just added one more person to your body count. Like, to be honest, like, I know someone who has slept with a lot of, like, they claim to have slept with a lot of women. And at first I was kind of disgusted by it, but then I was like, well, also, I don't really care, because you are that old and you probably haven't had that sex with that many people, to be honest. But maybe you have, I don't know. And so kind of a good on them, you know, at least they have the experience under their belt, and, you know, you'd hope they'd eventually be a decent sexual partner, if you know what I mean. And, you know, maybe they're not. Maybe they didn't grasp that sort of idolization within the situation of sex. So, you know, also people shaming, like, your experience is shamed upon sometimes, and it shows within sexual activity, like, performance almost. Like, people shame each other for the fact that their performance was not, you know, good enough to them or up to their standard. Like, if someone's not doing something for you right, then you have to fucking tell them. Otherwise, they're always going to be shit. Like, no one learns from not making mistakes, you know what I mean? No one learns if you're not going to tell them what you want. And that is a massive thing. I will just say that right there. That is why people don't learn things, because you don't tell them what you want. And they shouldn't, you know, and you should have to, because you're the one, like, I'm sorry, but that girl is not in your brain. Like, she cannot read you like a fucking book, because your brain is in, like, oh my God. How do you expect someone to know what you want if you don't say it? Like, obviously, they cannot read your brain. That's what I'm just trying to say. Like, that guy may not know something from previous partners because they never said anything. So it's your time to show them what you want and what you like, and just fucking get it over with. Anyway, moving on. I probably will go into a little more detail later, but for the meantime, we're going to start talking about the pill and your period, and, you know, probably listen up, boys, because it is important. So, let's do it. What is the pill? Essentially, I guess, the pill is, you know, a tablet form of hormones that contain progesterone and estrogen. So, those are the hormones that essentially stop the woman's ovaries from releasing an egg each month, and it thickens the mucus at the entrance of the uterus, which prevents like sperm from entering, essentially. So then what your period is the shedding of your endometrial lining that your body builds up each month in preparation for pregnancy. And the endometrium is where the fertilized egg implants itself. Where there is like no, when there is no fertilized egg, the endometrium is broken down and exits the body. So just a little bit of facts there for someone who doesn't know, or, you know, wants to know the definition or whatever. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of different ways. So I was on the pill from 16, I think, to 18 or 19. And I went through a lot of depression and angst. And I think it did affect me a lot more than what I think it, like what I realized. Then I went off it when I went away to the station. And to be honest, I'm pretty sure, like, I didn't really track how I felt or anything like that, but it definitely has made me a different person. And, you know, there are, like, books, and I will actually tag one book that is good. And this book is called How the Pill Changes Everything. And it's written by Sarah E. Hill. She is a psychologist, I'm pretty sure. She talks about all things to do with, you know, she talks about her own experiences. I'm pretty sure so obviously she studied all of these things and, you know, did her own studies on the pill and why and how. And, you know, like, she did three sections of the book is, number one, you are your biology. Number two, this is your brain on drugs, like hormones, stress response, sexual psychology. And three, the big picture, which is like the behavioral changes of women that affect like the behaviors of others. And essentially, like, she just goes through all of these things, like history of the period and history of the pill, you know, history of contraception. And it's very interesting book, and you should definitely try and read it. I've started reading it, and I'm not sure where I'm at the moment, but I did actually start reading it again just for the fact that so I could have something to put you in the direction of, you know, if you're interested about the psychology of the pill and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, and she actually talks about cool things that, like, about women's brains. So I'll just, like, I dot pointed, like, a few things that she said in the book. Women on the pill show structural and functional differences to women off the pill. Women on the pill don't have the cortisol spike in response to stress that women of, like, not on the pill has, and every other human. And the evidence and studies that have been documented since like the 1990s. And what else? So, like, women on the pill might influence, like, women on the pill influence who women choose to date and mate, their relationship satisfaction, whether their relationship will survive, economic growth, divorce rate, etc. Yeah, so there are just, like, a few things in there that might interest you. When I read it properly and all the way through, I will do another, like, episode and do a little bit more of a detailed, I guess, response to it, in which I feel is relative to my life and the lives of others. So I'll go into, like, my experience with the pill. It's definitely probably a common one. I don't know if I had any side effects. I never really thought about it until, like, now, I guess. And
I think that I'm way better off it. But then again, I haven't actually tried all the types and all the doses. I'm pretty sure I was on Femitab on like 20 milligrams of progesterone and estrogen. I've never tried the mini pill. I've never tried any other type of pill. And, you know, that's what my sister said to me. She was like, yeah, like currently I'm not on any form of hormonal contraception because I had this problem with my periods recently got worse, like a heavier, more painful cramps. I had all these other problems with my joints and my muscles, like I was in pain a lot. And I went to a gynecologist and they just said, you know, there wasn't any real, I guess, reflectors of if I had endometriosis or cystic fibrosis or, cystic fibrosis, polycystic ovaries or, all those sort of things that, there's so many things that happen, like so many syndromes and disorders and diseases and cancer and all of that sort of stuff. So I was not flagged for any of those things. So they essentially just said, go on this pill. You know, it's a lighter dose. I know that you don't, I said, I don't want to go on the pill. And they said, look, that's all there is. Otherwise you can have the surgery and find out if you do have, cysts on your ovaries or you have some sort of problem like endometriosis essentially. And I was really worried. So I did actually, I just gave up at that point. I was like, fuck it. Like, I'll see how it goes with, my diet and all of that sort of stuff. And then I kind of just forgot about it. And I think maybe a little bit of the placebo effect, like if you don't think about it, you're not really gonna actually, it's not obvious to you, like if you're thinking about seeing, like a fucking horse all the time, you're probably gonna see horses all the time. Like your brain is like essentially stimulated to find these things. And when it comes to your body, I think I'm a bit of hypochondriac. I definitely have had my fair share of injuries and scares. I've had a lot of head injuries that I haven't actually ever checked out properly. And obviously they don't, like, it's too much radiation for my brain because I'm so young and there isn't actually that much evidence that there is something wrong with my brain. Like I had a lot of head knocks last year, and to be honest, I think it actually has affected me a little bit. And I'm noticing things and I'm actually starting to get worried about it again. But essentially, I just have not tried anything since I've been, I went on the pill. I did go on the pill in December 2020 for like a month, and it made me feel fucking terrible. And that's when I met Liam as well. So I kind of went off it because I was like, we can work this out some other way. Like I can do something else instead of going on the pill because I feel like shit. I did only try it for a month, so I didn't give it that much time to set into my body and my body to get used to it again. But I essentially just didn't want to experience what I experienced over the last 3 years, which was pretty much fucking hell. I just deleted an entire fucking part to this. God, now I have to do it all again. So, oh my God. So I was going to give you, some facts about the pill, a bit of a history about the pill, and I'm going to have to do that all again. And I did it so well before. So the release of the oral contraceptive pill, Anavilar, was released in Australia on the 1st of February, 1961. However, it was actually released in America a year prior. And it was like sort of the starting point for women having rights to their, fertility control, birth control, all that sort of shit. And initially it only became available to married women. And then it burdened with like a 27.5% luxury tax. I've no idea what that means. And I don't think it really matters right now, but essentially
eventually the pill actually became available to everyone at $1 a month. You know, initially to married women, but eventually a few activists, you know, made it a public topic to talk about, and it became available to everyone that needed it. So it increased participation, became the basis for ongoing social change that included legislation around equal pay for equal work and freedom from discrimination. So it's kind of a starting point for us, all these different things. So the arrival of the contraceptive pill in Australia sort of took place against a range of issues, and this included like global population explosion, present fears of racial decline, long-standing moral strictures about women's sexuality and fertility, and the emergency of the second wave of the women's liberation movement, and about the concerns of potential side effects, physical side effects highlighted by the thalidomide tragedy, which I'm pretty sure was a bunch of, it was this chemical, I'm pretty sure they use. Oh, so it was a drug to aid with sleeping problems and insomnia. It was first marketed in Germany, if you can believe that, in the mid-1950s. And it was, you know, acceptable for anyone to ingest, including pregnant women and children. And, you know, they even proclaimed that they could not find a dose high enough to kill a rat, apparently. So that skyrocketed, and in 1960, the drug was marketed in 46 countries. At this time, thalidomide had begun to show the drug's effectiveness in alleviating nausea in pregnant women, and many physicians started prescribing the drug off-label as a treatment for morning sickness. So not long after it had started being used for this purpose, scientists began to observe birth defects in children born to mothers who had taken thalidomide during their pregnancies. And it was particularly dangerous for infants born to mothers that used the drug 20 to 34 days post-fertilization, so which is like a month into their pregnancy. And, you know, common birth defects seen in these children included deletion of the ears, deafness, severe underdevelopment of or absence of the arms, defects in the femur and tibia, and like so many more side effects. And more than 10,000 children around the world were born with thalidomide-related birth defects. And tragically, many of these children, you know, they're adults now, still suffer from the effects of thalidomide. So that happened as well when the pill came out, and that's, you know, called the thalidomide tragedy, if you ever come across that in history or in fucking everyday life. And so the pill was like contributed to so many social changes, so many scientific, I guess, inclusions of, you know, obviously thalidomide was a major, like so many, sorry, oh my God, I'm just stupid. So, you know, the pill came into effect when all these things are happening to pregnant women. So then, therefore, it could, you know, obviously reduce the effects, because all these pregnant women probably getting pregnant because they didn't have any sort of birth control that was reliable. So the pill made it reliable, even though initially it was only given to married women because, I don't know, it's probably something to do with religion and all that. So from, like, the 5th century onwards, here we go, like, the Roman Catholic Church took, like, a strong stance against the use of contraception. And it was like an opposition that it still continues into the 21st century, but birth rates revealed widespread limitation of human fertility over many centuries in Europe. And ever since, sorry, Richard Carlyle published a book called Every Woman's Book, or What is Love? And it was like containing the most important instructions of the prudent regulation of the principle of love and the number of a family in
1828. That was so fucking long ago. And the information about contraception has been published despite, like, prosecutions for obscenity, which I'm pretty sure is just not having sex. Like, nope, I was wrong. It's more despite, like, the fact that all this religious shit was coming, you know, from the Catholic Church, and, you know, all this information about contraception had been published despite basically going against the moral of the Catholic Church, essentially. Anyway, fucking moving on from that shit. Yeah, so Sanger, so there were these two very famous advocates for birth control in the early 20th century, which was Mary Stopes and Margaret Sanger. And both of these women were authors. They wrote a lot of articles and papers on, Marie Stopes was very much advocate for eugenics, birth control, women's rights. And also she was a paleobotanist. Yeah. And she made, like, significant contributions to plant paleontology and coal classification. And she was the first female academic of the faculty of University of Manchester, apparently. And then, so Margaret Sanger founded the birth control movement in, like, the early 20th century and became, you know, like, a lifelong advocate for women's reproductive rights. And later in her life, she spearheaded, like, the effort that resulted in the modern birth control pill by 1960. So, essentially, these two women did a lot to bring the subject into public eye and open public debate. So she encouraged Gregory Pincus and John Rock, which were the creators of the pill, to basically undertake the research in the face of, like, the medical establishment. You know, they were reluctant to fund research into fertility control for whatever the fuck reason that was for. And then Margaret Sanger also persuaded private philanthropist and feminist Catherine McCormick to fund Rock's research. So, you know, the trial started in early 1950s. So I think it was like 1954. And the first oral contraceptive pill, Enovid, was approved by the US Food and Drugs Administration on the 9th of May 1960. And it was released in Australia on the 1st of February 1961. This is according to the National Museum of Australia. And I'm pretty much, like, reading off their thing, so I'm not copywriting or anything. So, you know, it was previous forms of the contraception before this pill had been released were messy, unreliable, and, you know, the pill was simple to use, easy to hide, and markedly more effective, apparently. And early formulations of the pill had higher levels of synthetic estrogen, which often produced side effects such as nausea or weight gain. And later versions of the pill decreased the levels of hormones released into the body, and side effects correspondingly decreased. So, nowadays we are very lucky to have probably a lot less side effects than what there were, or, like, a lot less harsher, like, the same side effects, but they were a lot harsher, I'd say, because of the amount of hormones that were being, released into the body. And, you know, initially it was only available to married women with a prescription, and then in the incidence of sexual activity outside of marriage had been, like, on the rise from 1945, along with the rise in out-of-wedlock pregnancies until the early 70s, which means they were not married before when they were pregnant. And so this was, like, the result of less stringent supervision of young people, and the greater access of young people to cars, and the refusal of doctors to supply the pill to single women. And, you know, the pill also contributed to a drop in fertility within marriage, as many newlyweds took advantage of the opportunity to delay starting a family and, you know, getting pregnant.
So, yeah, so the German drug manufacturer Schering, I don't know, released Anavilar in Australia, and it prevented the company from advertising the pill. So, that was weird. In 1972, Prime Minister Gough Whitlam abolished the 27.5% luxury tax on all contraceptives and placed the pill on the pharmaceutical benefits scheme list, reducing it to a cost of $1 per month, which was pretty amazing, actually. And it's fucking not a dollar per month now, I'll tell you what. So that's just a little bit of history background. I'm not going to go into too much. Like, that was pretty detailed. I read that off the National Women's... Sorry, not National Women's. The National Museum of Australia, which I think is a pretty reliable source. And I've kind of cross-referenced it with a lot of other sources as well. So, you know, that's a little bit of a background history. I'm talking really fast because I'm sick and I need to get this done and I want to go have a shower. And I had my COVID test today, so it's like... I want to relax a bit before I get into fucking being busy again. Also, couldn't work today. Fucking hate my life. I felt so much better this morning. Had to go get a COVID test and then... Oh, I just fucking hate being sick. Anyway, we are going to talk about the experiences that everyone went through that replied to my story on Instagram. And, you know, I put like a questionnaire and a poll and a lot of people answered whether they take the pill or not. And it was very much 50-50. And I'm pretty sure I took a screenshot of how many people actually replied to it. But so I'll just talk about some of the side effects that everyone sort of in majority had in relation to negative side effects. So... Or negative experiences. So weight gain, you know, a lot of these experiences, like side effects, you know, maybe these people were doing the same thing every day in, day out, and that's how they know. But some people's lives change and they don't even realize it. Like, they might not be eating a certain food group, they might not be exercising as much as they used to, their metabolism might be even getting slower because they're getting older, or they're not eating the right amount of food and they're not drinking enough water. And, the, you know, like, there's all these sort of things that come into play with side effects and, you know. But I think, you know, a lot of... I'm no doctor. I just think that there are so many different things that... You know, like, so many different factors that are incorporated in your life that you can't really pinpoint what it is unless you do everything the same. And if you do everything the same, fucking, well, good on you, because I could never do that. And two, you might want to change something as well. Just if you like, you know, if you want to change yourself, you probably need to change something as well. Anyway, so these people going through weight gain, mood changes, unpredictable mood changes, depression, irregular periods, acne flares, blood clotting. One person had blood clotting and it led to a stroke. You know, it also affected their mental health, even though they were on it for so many years and they're like thinking of coming off it. Some people had both positive and negative. You know, positives, clearing up acne, lighter, regular periods, you know, less reduced pain with cramps. And then they also had mental health battles that they would like... their mental health went down as, you know, their physical health may have gone up. So, you know, there's so many things that are out there, but you really need to remember is everyone is different. Everybody's body changes. Your body changes as you get older, as you go through different aspects of your life. If you get a new job, you know, your stress levels may increase. All these hormones are going to be increasing or decreasing. You know, if you're exercising way more, your period might become heavier and a lot stronger in the sense of pain, which I think I found. It may come later in the month. It may take a few days. You know, it might take a few days, like, later than what your usual period month to month looks like. So many things. So what I will talk about And also the experience of people that are going onto the pill and they just, like, can't deal with the opinions of other people. And what I say to that is, do whatever you want. Make sure, you know, your doctor kind of explains everything to you so that you understand. If you don't understand, ask questions. If you, you know, track your progress when you first get onto it. If you don't feel it within the first month, it will probably take like a month or two for your body to adjust to it. And keep a track record of like how you feel, what moods you're in. Are you crying a lot? Are you happy? You know, are you putting on weight very fast? Are you losing weight? Are you, you know, all these, there's so many factors that you should probably keep an eye out for so you can either change pill, change contraception methods altogether, or just go on a lower dose of the pill. So, or a higher dose, it just depends. So I'm going to go into this one girl that replied, and she was like, yeah, I'm going on it, but there's so many, like, it's really overwhelming with the amount of opinions people have. And I think the only opinion you need to focus on is your own and the doctor's. They have a pretty vast, you know, they have, it's their scope of practice. So they need, so it, maybe even go to a women's health doctor. I know in like towns such as Tenerfield or like Glenanis or Stanthorpe or, you know, just tiny towns, both like regional towns, you know, you might not have a women's health doctor specifically. You might have like someone who, you know, ranges in everything, but women's health doctors, I do actually recommend them. I have had one at the start of the year and I, you know, loved it. You know, my roommate has mine. A lot of people have them and like go to see women's health specifically and also men's health. And I went to a men's health recently because my women's one is on study leave. So they range, you know, general practitioners also have had studies in specific things for women's health and men's health, you know. And, you know, most of these people are either women are studying women's health and men are studying men's health, so they can have a more in-depth and comfortable conversation with their own sex, like with their own gender, and it's easier for men to talk to men and it might be easier for women to talk to women. And it's, you know, that's sort of how the world works at the moment, I guess. And that's fine. And I think men's health is very important and it's definitely becoming more recognizable. I recently worked a luncheon for prostate cancer and it was just men on men talking about their feelings, and it was really quite empowering and powerful, and to experience that, it was fucked because I was sick then too. It was hard for me, but it was empowering, like it was powerful stuff. And, you know, these men actually didn't give a fuck what they said. Like, they were just like, you need to go get your prostate checked. You need to do this shit. Otherwise, you're going to die, or you're not going to, you know, spend the rest of your life with your family. And you got, you know, this shit. But also focusing on women's health, because I'm a woman, I think it's more relatable to my audience and my niche that you get, you know, you get your shit together when you're young and you learn about all the things that are a risk to women. And, you know, like ovarian cancer, breast cancer, fucking all these different diseases and illnesses to do with your uterus and your ovaries and your reproductive health as a whole, but also your mental health and your physical health, and what works for women does not work for men. It might, but in most cases it probably doesn't. So if you grew up in a household full of boys and you may have a single parent and he may be a male, then it's probably important for that male, like, parent figure, if he's a dude, if he's a man, to make sure you're going to see someone with the scope practice of a women's health, or make sure, you know, you have someone, he has someone that you can talk to, because if you're the only girl in the family, like for instance, then she needs support in order to know what's going on with her own body, because she's growing up in a fucking household full of testosterone and masculinity. Okay, so this other one, positives, you know, it reduced her cramps. This is the pill. Intensity of a period, you know, she used to go home from school and spend days in bed, and I know someone who does that now, and she's had so many health problems, and, you know, she's been on the pill, and she has been on all this stuff with her heart, her brain, you know, it's all fucked. Anyway, this girl that I'm talking about now, you know, her negatives were, she lived in a small town, very smaller than Tenerfield, and, you know, she could only get a prescribed pill at the chemist, and it was always, like, a no-name substitute that fucked with her head, and so her moods and, mental health, and the fillers that they put in it weren't good for her or her mental health at all. So she's noticed her period is different lately, and she reckons, like, it's the pill, and she's been on it since 16, so she's, like, 7 years older since she's had it, and it's starting to have bad effects in her body. And someone else actually read in the same thing, and they're about the same age, I'm pretty sure. So it's interesting, you know, your body changes, so you should always be checking in on what is going to work for you. Like, a certain dose at a certain age may work for you for X amount of time, but then as soon as your hormones start to change, or, you know, your livelihood is changing, that's when you should really mark out what is changing in your body as well. So, you know, having, I guess, this online doctors and prescription is really good for people who are in small towns. You know, you will be able to get it delivered to your door discreetly, and, you know, it is easier in bigger cities because this traveling distance is like zero, straight from the airport, straight from post office or whatever, whereas it has to travel further distances between regional towns and stuff like that. So I suggest, like, for this sort of circumstance, get onto either a GP or get onto the online Yuli company that just delivers it to your door, and you talk to doctors, but you don't have to go face to face. And if you do, then go to a GP if you can. But this is just another option for you if you don't have the access to a GP, or you cannot get yourself there, or you're not, you know, or you can't at all. So, and this girl's, you know, some people may be vegan, and the pill isn't necessarily vegan. It uses lactose, which is derived from milk, I'm pretty sure. Oh, I think, yeah. So cows, bovines, and it breaks down in your stomach, and also magnesium, which is derived from some animals. So I'd say, like, I'd say it's from bone or liver, like organs as well. So, you know, if you are a vegan or a vegetarian, if you have strong beliefs against the, I guess, violence and, you know, it's a really touchy subject, I think, but if you're against, you know, animal cruelty, and you're against eating animals that you would, you know, have for pets, then this is just something also that you could keep in mind. And I am very much open to that. Like, I love animals, yet I do eat them. I've, you know, being on a station, you see a lot of death, and you see, and, you know, our meat came from our own stock. So, you know, we did a lot of, we saw a lot of shit, and, you know, it is horrible, and it kind of makes you sick. Well, it kind of makes me sick, but it's just an interesting experience. And I think when you have the best of both worlds, and you've worked with animals, and you've worked with death, in, like, animal death, and you've worked with, you know, carcasses and what the meat does, essentially. And this girl had a really good point. You know, people use the argument about meat having all the nutritional values human needs, except the fact that all these nutritional needs come from plants, you know, cattle eat grass, grains, seeds, in order to gain the fat and the muscle and the, oh, what's it called? Yeah, anyway, and the marble, for it to be a decent cut of meat, right? So they build, you know, it's just like us, we eat, like, plants are actually kind of the basis of all nutrients,
found in animals, I guess you could say. And it's actually true, you know, like there's a, so omega-3 in fish oil, fish get it directly from the seaweed and they don't naturally have it within their bodies. You know, kidney beans have so many more nutrients than a steak. And you know, this, I'm not going to go into it too much, but if you're into that sort of, like if you are interested in that, there's also the fact it is not vegan. The pill is not vegan. So, I'm going to go into the one that the girl that had a stroke from the pill. So it was recent, I believe. And she was on the Depo-Provera injection, which contains progesterone. It involves a single shot every 3 months. She had a really bad experience. It affected her mental health. She was super emotional all over the place. And then she tried the combined pill, which is the estrogen and progesterone hormone together, Evelyn, which she was on for about 1.5 years. And she experienced mild side effects of like slight weight gain and mood swings. And then recently she had a stroke a couple of months ago, which caused by increased clotting, which is known as the side effect of estrogen. So she's no longer able to be on hormonal contraception at this stage, which is really hard because all you've got is condoms in like the copper IUD. And that's pretty much it. Like that's all you have left. You know, they suggested the Mirena, which is the hormonal one though, which she's like, she said that she's super hesitant to go on. She doesn't want to go through another situation where there are side effects and she's seriously considering just using condoms. So like, it's such a hard part, like it's such a hard gig not having any other options. Like I'm just not going on the pill because it makes me feel like shit, not because I literally can't go on the pill. Like that's just, it's put in perspective of if you should go on the pill, yes, you should if you have the choice. However, if you feel like you can't, like if you feel like it's not good for you, try something else. I'm probably going to try the mini pill or something other than the combined pill because, or like a lower dose because it really didn't work very well with me. I guess like I've always been brought up in a home where holistic health is a very important thing and also having natural ingredients and natural ways of reducing, you know, pain or I guess uncomfortability or like anything to do with your body or organs or anything like that. So yeah, so there's also, you know, there's so many people that have tried every single method. So this one chick, she's tried the bar injection. She's tried pills. Every single one reacts with her body really badly. She's hesitant to go on the IUD because they said they don't recommend it for her, so she didn't want to do it. Condoms have been, like, the only option for her. And that's, you know, it's so fucking sad that she can't get anything else. And, you know, like, the only other thing, really, realistically, other than condoms and the copper IUD and the Mirena, is getting your tubes tied. Like, that's it, essentially. And I don't think that's, I'm not sure if that's reversible or not. So another one was, she's now a nurse. She had like huge mood instability, weight fluctuations, irregular periods. You know, despite taking it as instructed, she had irregular periods, so it didn't regulate her period whatsoever. Didn't regulate her hormones. You know, she had breakthrough bleeding and she felt like it made her insane. And she was on that for a year when she was about 15. So it wasn't working. And then she tried another pill for another 4 years, which she said she regrets. And then she got the Mirena placed in last year. So it's been sort of like the best thing she's ever done. And she, you know, has become a nurse. So she has a deeper understanding of contraceptives. And she had like a really good discussion with her GP regarding like the same thing, and they decided that the Mirena was best for her. So she's tried it, she's been on it for long enough that she thinks it's you know, working for her. And I think that's the thing, having a decent conversation with your GP, which I'm bound to do. I really need to do that, but I'm fucking sick all the time, so I can't go in. I wish, like, my GP that I really want to see, she's on study leave and she has been since, like, May, so it's really inconvenient for me. But I can go find another one, which is another thing. I think the really important thing to take away is going to your GP, whether you're, like, for female contraceptives, and discussing what is best for you, because unfortunately our bodies are the ones that suffer from it. And if you, you know what's up, if you know something is wrong with you, go see a GP. That's all I'm gonna say. It's pretty straightforward. It's not that hard. So there was also one girl, she got the bar and she didn't really want to get, like, the needle in her arm again, so she went on a different pill. She got migraines, which she was worried would lead to a stroke, which is quite, you know, apparent. And so she changed to the mini pill, and ever since then she's been really great. The mini pill is just a smaller dose of progesterone. It's just a single hormone, progesterone, in which just thickens the lining of your, the mucus lining of your uterus, which prevents the sperm from entering it. I'm pretty sure that, like, that's it. And, you know, there's so many people that have had it just, like, fucked up their hormones. It did nothing for them. This sounds like I'm against the pill, but I'm not. There's just so many negative experiences that people need to know about so that they can, you know, gain some, you know, knowledge that these things can happen. And if you don't sort of monitor it, it could happen to you. And if you don't monitor your own health and well-being, like, I can't fucking talk at all at the moment because I've lost my appetite. You know, I keep getting sick. I'm not focusing on the things, like, I'm focusing on this podcast and work, and I just hate saying I can't work, like, when I'm sick, because I just want to get better so therefore I can work more. But then I keep getting sick, so I can't fucking find the balance where I don't get sick and I can work at the same time. It's so stressful. And, you know, monitoring the way you feel on the pill or any other contraceptive is a massive thing for you to move forward in your life without any other problems. So finding out what works for you, you know, it's a trial and error. It's a long journey. It may be really short if you figure out the pill is good for you, if the mini pill is good for you, if the IUD is good for you. It just really depends who you are, what your body is like. Everyone is different. And the main thing, I think, to take away is this, is there are so many options out there. However, if your body does not react too well with any sort of hormonal contraception, essentially all you have is a copper IUD, which is probably not recommended for young people. It's more for people who have had children, but I haven't really met anyone with the copper IUD yet. A lot of young people are recommended the Mirena, which is the hormonal IUD. And then you have condoms, and then you have tying your tubes, which if you do not want children, I guess you could say that, but I'm pretty sure your mind will change. Almost probably guaranteed eventually you will probably want children. I'm not sure about this day and age because we've got COVID. It's very unpredictable. You know, people are actually wondering if they want to have kids in this era because it's going to be very dangerous and it's very unpredictable. And, you know, some people are, you know, I haven't been the best with my sexual health. Sometimes I haven't worn condoms. But I definitely don't have an STI, so I'm just saying that. You know, get checked regularly. Also, if you're not wearing condoms and you're just on the pill and you're having sex with lots of people, you should be wearing a condom all the time. You do not know who lies and who tells the truth unless you've known them for a very long time. And even then, people can hide their true identity. So I think I'm just going to leave it at that. That's kind of all I have time for. I don't want to keep going on and on and on about it. But I'm so sorry that I sound nasally. I hope that my next,
you know, one of my best friends are coming up, so I think we're going to have a really fun conversation, and it'll be a little bit lighthearted and not so much about... It's just going to be really informative into the lives of my life and her life and how we were when we were younger. Yeah, so I've got to get going on that one. Anyway, so thank you for listening. Give me a follow, give me a download, give me a like, you know, whatever you want. If you want some feedback, you know, give me some constructive criticism. Honestly, I would be happy to do that, like happy to comply. And, you know, if it's like relative and actually helpful to me, then obviously I'll probably change something if you don't like it. But also I probably won't. I don't know. It just depends. But yeah, if you want to hear a specific thing about my life or a specific, you know, subject or topic on the podcast, let me know. Love y'all. Yuck. Love you all. And hope you have a good day. I hope you've taken away something from this. And yeah, love you all. Ciao. Au revoir.